Hello and welcome. My name is Marian Jensen.
I'm Sarah Eden.
And we have with us Jeanette Rallison. Jeanette, welcome.
Thank you.
We have Jeanette on for several reasons. First of all, because she's wonderful and a talented writer. But also, it's my hope that we'll become buddies, and come February when the snow's flying up here, we'll be able to record a podcast on site, because Jeanette lives down in Arizona.
Yeah.
much better down there.
Not right now, but in February, yes.
There you go.
Indeed. Rob is not with us. As you've noticed, Rob has missed several episodes of our podcast. And he's explained why on his blog, but we did want to mention he's having some medical issues. He's been having some anxiety attacks, a panic disorder. I'm not sure the exact name, but he definitely would be here if he can. He wanted us to let you know that he will be back just as soon as possible. And our best wishes go out to Rob. Get feeling better, Rob.
Absolutely.
We need you back so that we can make fun of you again.
I know, it's hard to mock someone who's not here.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm sort of like the sacrificial lamb then, isn't it?
That's right.
The lamb to be mocked.
We will mock you instead.
You can call me Jeanettison. That will work.
Perfect.
Yeah, we told you that this was all nice and to have you on, but really we're just going to roast you as soon as we get going.
There's so much to roast.
Oh, dear.
Starting with my inability to work Skype, that would be the first thing.
Yes, you listening audience missed all the drama.
But we are up and running now. We have a couple of topics today. We're going to talk a little bit about young adult versus adult writing, kind of the differences of that. We're also going to talk about changing genres when a writer decides that they'd like to try something new. And then, of course, we have our favorite bad romance game that we're going to play.
Woo-hoo!
So before we get started, maybe Jeanette, why don't you just tell us a little bit about your books and your writing career? Just give us a quick rundown.
Well, I started publishing with Deseret Book, and I wrote some young adult books for them. I also wrote some romances under the name Sarah St. James. Then I moved to the national market, and I've been writing young adult books there for, oh gosh, I don't know how many years, probably about 11, 12, something like that. My 18th will come out September 27th. It's called Slayers. It's under the pen name CJ Hill. And I've been around. I guess I'm one of the old, you know, elderly, wizened, wizened, whatever, you know. That's me, the wizard person, except for I'm not as impressive. And
stop. Well, I'm
is that your official bio tonight?
Yes. That is what I put on my business card, actually.
That's a big business card.
Yes.
Well, I'm impressed.
Yes. Experienced and cynical. That's
nice.
I thought I was doing good with two pen names, but you've got three. Well, your real name and two pen names, so you've got me beat.
Yeah. I can blurt my own self.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get started. We're going to talk a little bit about kind of the difference between young adult versus writing for adults. And we've talked a little bit about this in previous episodes, touched on it. You know, Jeanette, where you've written for both, we kind of wanted your take. Let's just talk. What are some basic differences between a young adult book versus an adult book?
Well, there are quite a few. The first and most obvious is that a young adult book is going to have a teen character. Kids generally read a couple years up. So if you have a book and your main character is 14, it's probably going to be 12, 13, you know, 14-year-olds that are going to be reading that. And kids, when they're about 16 years old, they don't leave the young adult market altogether, hopefully, but they start reading adult books. So sort of by definition, the young adult market, you know, goes up to 16-year-olds and starts in the tweens, the high reading tweens. So you're going to have your main character be a teen. You're going to have issues that teens care about. That would be boys for, you know, a lot of the girl books. But, you know, I mean, you can have any issues. If you wanted to write a book about environmental issues, you know, all you would have to do is make it important to teens by making it somehow relevant in their life. Another big difference between, well, I guess it's not a difference, it's just something that you have to pay attention to as a writer, is you can't have an adult come in and solve a child's problem in a YA novel. They have to solve it themselves, which, depending on the genre you're writing, can be, you know, tricky. If you're writing, you know, an adventure where you're, you know, 15-year-old Susie is being stalked by some creepy guy, you have to give her a good reason for not telling her parents and having them step in and solve the problem, which is why you find so many orphans in YA literature.
Exactly.
And dysfunctional families. The single alcoholic mom is also another, you know, popular choice of YA authors. So
it gets gets the parents out of the picture.
Yes, you need to find a way to get those parents out of the picture. Also, for teens, a lot of them do not like reading thick books. A lot of the teens are reading for maybe book reports or, you know, things like that. And so your YA books are going to tend to be shorter than your adult books, around 200 pages. Fantasies can go longer, although with my fantasies, you know, I've sent them in and they've been around 400 pages, and my editors have made me cut down those, and then they shrink the print so that they can fit more on the page so that they don't look like they're quite as long. But yeah, keep that in mind. If you're writing a YA, you don't want a 100,000 word novel. You know, try and keep it more, you know, 50, 60,000 words, and you're going to be in better shape.
You know, I like what you said about issues. Sometimes we think, oh, this is young adult, so we can't tackle some of the bigger issues. And I think even with middle grade, I mean, you can tackle the big issues. It's just how you approach them. So, you know, you're not going to go into as much detail, or you're going to focus on different things depending upon your audience. But you can still approach, you know, whatever topics you want,
right,
for the most part.
Yeah, and really, in the young adult, you can pretty much find any topic. If you want a, you know, book about a transvestite dog who wants to join the circus, it's probably out there.
Yep.
So, you know,
wait, I wrote that book.
That was one of Sarah's bestsellers, actually.
Pen name.
Yeah, but just, you also have to remember to keep it fast moving, because this is the Nintendo generation. We have the attention of fruit flies, and so we can't really do the Charles Dickens, starting off with a lot of backstory and life history. You've got to, you know, jump into that action, or have some intriguing dialogue, or, you know, or something that's going to draw the kids in right away.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that brings up a question I had. We've discussed in a previous episode the idea of dumbing down your writing for a younger audience, and obviously that's not the best word choice, but what are your thoughts on that? Do you have to write down to a young adult audience?
Yeah, I don't think that you do. And I like, with my vocabulary and stuff, I generally don't. I have one editor, and I've been publishing for, you know, four different houses in the national market, which is a story in and of itself. I won't go into that. But I have one editor who kind of calls me on it and will say, I don't think this is teen vocabulary, and she's trying to dumb down the vocabulary. Most of the other editors have left the vocabulary alone, which I think is really a better way to go, because I think that's how kids are going to learn, you know, what the word acrimonious means, or caustic, or, you know, whatever you want them to learn on those SAT tests that are coming up. So, yeah, you know, I wouldn't tell authors to dumb down the vocabulary, although in my one editor's defense, I do tend to sometimes make my young adult guys sound like they are Niles and Fraser Crane. And, you know, maybe that's not in type. And yeah. So I had this test in my mind when I was writing, which was called, Would My Teenage Son Say This?
And, test.
Yes. And that worked for a while, but then I sent him to this prep school, and then suddenly he was saying all sorts of things. Like this one time, I swear this is a true story, he was sitting at the computer, you know, doing something, and he said, what is this tomfoolery? What are these hooligans? And I was just like, okay, there the loop test goes. I cannot use that test anymore. He just used the word tomfoolery. I don't even use that. So, yeah.
The test becomes, would the neighbor's teenage son say
this? No. Yes, we won't name names, because then that would get me in trouble. But yeah, the other solution is just to write about really smart kids. I do
there
that
you
sometimes.
Go.
They were all brilliant, which is why they had the vocabulary of a 45-year-old woman.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So let me ask this. Do you think that, is it easier to write young adult? I think sometimes we think, oh, you know, I'm just writing to kids, so it's going to be easier to. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think it's easier. And I can't say that it's necessarily harder, because I think it's always hard to write a well-crafted book.
Yep.
But, you know, maybe teenagers are a little bit quicker to put it down, though. So, you know, maybe in that way it is harder to capture their attention and keep it, you know, that you have to be that much more on your game as a writer. Yeah. Well, also, a thing to remember, if you're writing humor like I do, is that, you know, the younger you get, the sort of more basic the humor gets. And, you know, I have a friend who writes picture books, and her you know, golden idea for writing humor is to use the word booger and underpants. And that, you know, kids think that that's hilarious. That perhaps doesn't work so well in a young adult novel, but that is another thing to remember.
That's my bread and butter right there.
Okay. Welcome to Marian's life as an author.
I cut my teeth on the book Everybody Poops, and it's been uphill from there. Let's talk a little bit about marketing. Have you found any challenges or benefits marketing to young adults?
Well, I do think that you know, being able to go to do school visits is a great way for, you know, authors to get in front of kids and talk about their books and get kids excited to read. So that is a benefit. At the same time, it's also a drawback because, you know, hello, how many of us want to go speak to an auditorium full of antsy junior high kids on a Friday afternoon?
Yeah.
You know, that's not really up there on a lot of people's fun to-do list. So, you know, that also has its own challenges, and trying to get into schools, and schools are busy with testing, and if, you know, the funniest stories I think authors tell are the bad school visit stories. I don't know why I find them so hilarious, but yeah, that's the book I would like to see somebody put up there, is, you know, the horror stories of school visits. But you know, I've had my share where you go and they forgot that you were coming, or the person who set it up wasn't the person who was, you know, supposed to, you know, meet you and take, you know. I did go to a class once where the teacher looked at me and said, oh, well, whoever set this up must have gotten the times wrong. We're going to lunch in 10 minutes, but go ahead, tell us about your books for 10 minutes.
It was 10 minutes. Nice.
Yeah, I'm so glad I drove out here, you know. So, yeah, there's those kind of challenges. Sometimes I envy the romance market where, you know, you just looked for lonely housewives to peddle your wares to. But
well, yeah, because they gather in groups all the time. It's so easy to track down it now.
I mostly just, you know, hang around Sarah's friends. That's where I find the romance junkies.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about changing genres. All right, we're back. We're going to talk a little bit. We're here with Jeanette, and we're going to talk a little bit about changing genres. I know a few authors who have kind of made a name for themselves in one genre and then have decided to change. So we wanted to talk about that, when you would do that and why you would do that. But first, let's talk. Maybe I'll just throw it out there. What are some of the challenges that come from changing genres?
Well, if you use a new pen name, as I'm using for my book that's coming out September 27th, called Slayers Under C.J. Hill. Do you like how I snuck in that little promotional?
Excellent,
thing?
Excellent.
Keep on at it.
You know, in some ways, I feel like I'm starting all over again,
which is
frustrating, because, you know, I hope at least that I have some Jeanette Rallison fans that will look for my titles in the bookstore or library or Amazon or wherever, and I worry that they're not going to, you know about this new book. So I'm having to work twice as hard trying to promote and let people know. And so that definitely is a challenge. On the other hand, you know, there's benefits too. Hopefully I'm going to hit a new audience, maybe a wider audience. Instead of a romantic comedy, this is more of an action adventure fantasy it still does have some romance and humor, because I'm hopeless that way, and it's, you know, yes. I have to romance, you know, you just have to throw that in. But yeah, so I'm hoping to tap into some fantasy readers and action readers that I might not have had otherwise. My publisher is hoping to tap into the boy market, which is why they put a really sort of boy-looking cover on my book, and I have initials instead of a girl name. I don't know how that will go. We'll hope for the best. But yeah, it's all sort of a gamble, really, no matter what you do.
Yeah, and I think that's the, you know, as I was thinking about this, that is the biggest challenge is, you know, if you've built a fan base and you have folks who, you know, read everything that you put out, and then you change genres, some of them are going to come with you, but some of them might, you know, decide that, well, just this is what I like, and I'm not interested in the new stuff. So it is kind of like you're starting over again. The other thing that I thought, too, is that, you know, if you're going to write in a genre, you really need to be well-read in that genre. So if you're thinking about changing, then you know, you can't just start writing in a genre that you've never read before. So it kind of goes back to the, you've got to become well-versed in that genre before you start out.
Yes, I'm nodding my head. You can't see that right now, but I'm, and yes, in agreement with you. You need to know the, you know, what's been done before, what's out there right now, the cliches that are in the genre. Right now, my daughter has been downloading Christian romances on her Kindle, and she finally stopped and said, "Mom, in every single one of these books, the bad guy has kidnapped, you know, the heroine, and the hero has to come rescue her." In every single one. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, maybe those people should have read some, you know, some other ones before they put that in the climax.
Right, right.
So as we talk about some of these challenges, why, I'll ask this generically, but then also specifically, why would an author want to change genres? And maybe, Jeanette, why you decided to do that?
Well, I for me, it comes to, you know, I just have a ton of plot ideas, and they aren't all romantic comedies set in high school. In fact, you know, it was really my editors who wanted me to write those same sort of books. They were like, okay, this worked before, we want to brand you, and I was really sort of getting sick of high school stories. I was writing about high school for longer than I was in high school, and, you know, there's only, you know, so many words for locker. Actually, one, it's locker. And, you know, try writing a scene with two people at their lockers without overusing the word locker. So, yes, in Slayers, I don't think I ever used the word locker, and I was very happy about that. But
you could just call it a textbook storage unit.
There you go. That will be my next thing. Yeah, that's like a door, too. There's the only other word for door is portal, and we don't really use that. So, yes, those are the little things about writing you don't think about until you're actually in the scene.
Right.
But, no, I just have tons of ideas. I mean, probably you guys do, too. Some of them are straight fantasies. Some are adults. Some are science fiction. You know, some are, you know, maybe straight contemporaries. But, yeah, you get to the point where you want to write what you want to write. You want to write those stories that speak to you, and sometimes you have to switch genres to do that.
Yeah, and I think that's important, that writing is a lot of fun, but it's also a lot of work. There's those times when you sit down and you just think, I could do this forever, and then there's times when you think, I'm going to chuck this laptop. I'm done with this. So you really have to make sure that you're finding enjoyment in it. And I'm in the same situation. I've written middle grade and young adult, and I've got this story bouncing around my head, and I've started writing it, and it's definitely not. I mean, it's definitely more an adult, but it's because I enjoy it and I can't get it out of my head that I want to write this. And so, you know, if you can't find enjoyment in it, then you can get burnt out.
Yeah. And sometimes I'll start a new project just because, like you said, I'm kind of burned out, and it'll start out as something I'm just meaning to do for my own sanity. How do you know if what you're looking at is a potential, you know, new genre for you to write in, or if it's, like I said, more just you needing to change things up for a little while?
I think if you love it, write it. I mean, you know, I think those are the best stories, are the ones that the writers really enjoy writing. And, you know, and then after it's done, that's when you, you know, try and find a home for it. The danger in that is I have a book coming out in September 2012 called Erasing Time, and it's a time travel dystopia. And I wrote it, and it was a lot of fun, and I only meant to write one, and Harper bought it and wants a sequel. And so now I'm going to have to, you know, figure out book two in the dystopian world, and I hadn't planned on that. So there are always those issues to consider, that if you write one book in a genre, you may have a publisher who wants you to write several more.
More than that, right.
That was another question I wanted to ask was, can you write in two or three genres? And, you know, do you think that would overtax an author? Is it, does it, again, come back to if you're having fun? You know, it doesn't matter what you're doing.
Well, both. I've had a lot of fun with the last books that I've written, but I've also just been, because I've been writing for so many different publishers, so many different books, there have been a lot of days where I look like a troll, unshowered, you know, huddled over my computer, and I'm telling my kids, you know, go open some SpaghettiOs for dinner. I'm asked to write 50 more pages. And so, yeah, you can find yourself in a bad situation. With me, writing longer books, I don't know why I didn't take into consideration that a 400-page book wouldn't just take twice as long to write, but it would take twice as long every single revision that you did.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I kind of overtaxed myself that way, and I'm trying to now step back and write shorter books.
Well, I think that's all the questions I've got. Sarah, I don't know if you have any other questions or any other thoughts, or Jeanette, about changing genres.
No, I think we covered it well.
I have a question for Sarah, because Sarah has written those lovely Regency romances, but I know she has another YA one. I'm wondering if she's ever going to get to that.
If it'll ever see the light of day.
If it'll ever see the light of day.
My issue with it is I know I need to go back and do a lot of reworking on it, and I just don't feel the enthusiasm for it at the moment. So it's kind of just sitting there waiting for me to get back to it.
Okay, so basically what we need to do is, you know, barrage Sarah with demands.
Requests.
We want a commitment right here, right now on this podcast, Sarah.
Sorry, not going to happen.
Well, you could put probably a Regency heroine in there. That would work.
That's right. I can totally make that happen.
All right. We're going to take a break and come back, and we're going to play a little bit of Bad Romance. And we're back. We're going to play some Bad Romance with Jeanette Rallison, and I'm going to turn things over to Sarah to get us started.
All right, fantastic. Just as a recap, here's the way we play this game. I have randomly selected an actual Harlequin romance novel. I will read the back cover copy of that book, and then we will, one at a time, change that book into something completely unrecognizable. So here you go. I've been practicing my best Rob Wells reads a romance novel description voice.
Excellent.
So that you won't miss him too much in the weeks he's gone. Okay, the title of this book is The Last Honest Outlaw by Carol Finch. Murder and abduction had introduced Rosalie Matthews to Eli McCain, who'd taken her hostage in a hail of gunfire. Yet, as she tended him in a deserted cabin, she knew two things for sure. This rough and ready loner was no outlaw, but he was a thief of hearts. Eli McCain knew he was probably on every wanted poster in the Rockies by now for a crime he didn't commit. But no one was going to believe a half-breed mountain man was innocent of anything, except maybe his prisoner, Roz Matthews, a feisty whirlwind of a woman who swore she'd clear his name. Bum, bum, bum.
Excellent.
So that is what we are going to work with. And I think we decided I was going to go first. Does that sound right, guys?
That'll work.
Okay, so I am going to change the genre. Since I am actually looking at the list, I'm going to have Jeanette give me a number between 1 and 20.
17.
17. Okay, this is supposed to be changed into an angsty teen romance. Perfect. Okay, so rather than being taken hostage in a hail of gunfire, Eli McCain is actually from the rival high school that Roz Matthews goes to, and they are approaching the big rival game. And, you know, they're supposed to go steal mascots. Well, she gets caught in the, quote, crossfires of their mascot abduction efforts. And now he's holding her hostage so she won't turn him in. Bum, bum, bum.
Excellent.
Right.
Not creepy at all.
Not at all. This actually happened to me in high school. This is not a biography. Oh, my gosh. All right, who's next, guys?
I think I'm up.
All right, give me a number between 1 and 20.
Let's go with 1.
1. Oh, ho, ho. You have the anti-hero.
Anti-hero.
Yeah, he's a hero, but he doesn't want to be.
He's a bad boy.
That's right.
So this is a new character, right?
Or you can adjust one we already have. Either way.
All right, so they were trying. So Eli was trying to steal the mascot. Is that correct?
Right.
And now has Rosalie or Roz holding her hostage, not hostage, keeping her there so that she doesn't turn him in. So the mascot stealing was actually successful. It was the anti-hero dressed up in his mascot uniform. A big badger.
Nothing says anti-hero like a badger.
That's right. So we have this poor guy who was dressed up in a badger costume, and he was kidnapped as a joke. And so now he's stuck there and has to listen to Rosalie and Eli flirt with themselves. with each other, yes.
That would work too.
And so
I often flirt with myself.
So he becomes the anti-hero to the reader who enjoy his comic relief, because he's pretty cynical. Anti-heroes are usually pretty cynical.
Nice.
And, you know, I just have got nothing.
Right, well, we'll add a plot element to where this story goes.
Yes, luckily we have Jeanette to wrap all of this up together and save us.
That's right. With her author genius. All right, Jeanette, a number between 1 and 20.
3.
3. Okay. It is identical twins have switched places.
Perfect.
Go for it.
Okay, so I guess Rosalie has an identical twin, and the twin, Leah Rose, you know, finds out that Rosalie is being held by Eli because she was actually on the phone to, you know, Marion, the kidnapped badger anti-hero, and so she heard what was going on. So in an effort to save Rosalie, Leah Rose distracts Eli and then switches places with her so she can escape. First, by this time, Rosalie doesn't want to escape because, as you know, Eli McCain isn't a thief except of hearts. So they actually have a cat fight, and, you know, the badger gets the girl who doesn't win is pretty much how it ends.
He gets the leftovers.
She gets the leftovers.
Nice.
Excellent.
Oh, fantastic. Jeanette, when you get back to writing teen romances, this is the book you need to write.
I like it, Sarah. I do. I can make it work.
Genius.
Very good.
A werewolf, it will be gold.
That's right. Someone needs to sparkle.
Well,
oh, my gosh. All right. And as always, listeners, we will leave you with your own assignment. Take that same book description, but I'm going to give you things you need to add. For your genre, make it a World War II drama starring an overprotective parent and love at first sight. Can't wait to see what you have to write.
I think that'll work. We'd like to thank Jeanette Rallison for being with us. Jeanette, why don't you tell us one more time about your book that's coming out?
It's called Slayers. It's about kids who have superpowers to fight dragons. There are no badgers involved in this book, although now I'm wishing I'd thrown one in.
It is sort of a shame.
Yeah, comes out September 27th under the pen name CJ Hill.
Excellent.
And it will make you instantly rich and popular if you buy it.
Perfect. And it wards off
badges. Can I just say, as someone who read an early version of it, it's excellent.
Very good. Thank you. All right, we will talk again soon. Thanks.